Welcome to the For Your Thoughts podcast, where psychology, pop culture, and self meet. I'm here with Hugh Massey. Hugh is known as a behavioral solutions architect who self-empowers people globally with increased behavior and money consciousness for unlocking exponential growth. I love to ask my guests, like, who were they? Who are they now? And like, what do they see for their future to kind of get a broader scope of their life? So to, you know, get into their journey. So you can go ahead and let us know that.
That's a really good question, Penny. And I think it gets into something that is important to me, and that's identity. Mm. And our identity evolves as our life evolves. And I always like to think of us as a human being, not a human doing. Mm. And, but, you know, if you sort of look at my journey, I suppose you could say it started in Australia. You can tell from the accent, Sydney, Australia. And I was a CPA in American terms, or in Australian terms, a chartered accountant, very much about the numbers. I specialized in taxation. But I got to a point where I wasn't fulfilled by it, and I had an entrepreneurial drive. Mm-hmm. And that was outside of the work I was actually doing. And I was always, I think, really from about 19 years old, doing a deal of something. And so at 30 years old, after 10 years in the accountancy profession, I left and set up a wealth management business.
Okay.
But that's where I really started to see that if you're going to be successful in business, it's actually not really about understanding the numbers. It's actually about understanding people.
Right.
And what drives and motivates them, what makes them stressed, you know, all those types of things. How do people interrelate? And that took me on the journey of becoming more towards what I am today in being a behavioral solutions architect.
What is a behavioral architect? Like, if you can explain, then also I think people need to know, like, what wealth management is as well.
Yeah, so wealth management in its maybe I deal with that one first. In its vanilla sense, wealth management is helping people manage their money, crafting a financial plan that's tailored to their life goals, and then designing how money gets dealt, you know, earned, spent, invested, given, dealt with in every way around that. That's the ideal world of wealth management done well.
Yeah.
In detail. So the behavioral solutions architect is really the fact that what I do is take our system, which has got a whole lot of measurements about how people tick, and we get a custom measurement on every human. But what I do is design technology apps that use those behavioral insights so that people in specific areas of their life
get
a customized solution. So that could be, there are apps out there that use our insights to provide a financial health platform, or for hiring people, or something I'm really big on at the moment is psychological safety in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are better understood, then you're going to have, and you can create more openness.
Right.
So that's what I do. So I'm very good at helping build businesses and solutions using human behavior.
Right. Especially as people are beginning to discover more of who they are, their traumas, what makes them tick. I feel like we're all like in this evolution of just human understanding for ourselves and others. And I think that like we're all bringing that to the workplace. So I think that's like very much so really important.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned at the start something that's important that plays into this is mental health and, you know, people's state of mind. And I think a very big thing for me in doing all of this is helping people reduce stress. And stress comes from not living a life that's aligned to who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You're not comfortable. And stress, the biggest cause of stress is money.
Right. Speaking of money, we are living in an economy where they're saying that there's no jobs, you know, there is like no money to actually get, but we also are seeing online things about money mindset, money manifestation. We're also now learning that the people who are making money, the people whose wealth that you've managed, they had a different ideology and they think about money differently. So can you speak more to what that is and kind of break it down? Because I feel like people have these affirmations and just these different things that they are doing in order to change their money mindset, because it's really hard, especially for people of color who are kind of systematically already in another position. Can you speak to how the people who are wealthy, what are they doing differently? How are they thinking differently? And what can the people who want to be in that place, like how can we think in that
way? You've cut right to the chase of some really big issues there, Penny. And I'll try and unpack it at a number of levels.
Okay.
The first thing is that the number one cause of stress is money. And for some people, that's because they don't have enough when they have difficulty finding a job. Interestingly, having enough is sort of considered by the Happiness Institute being around $125,000.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have $125,000,
that's income, enough.
That's enough to be happy.
Okay.
Now, of course, if you have, say, less than $30,000 or $40,000, then you've got a whole lot of other problems. Or you've got a lot of credit card debt and other pressures in the family. You know, that's a problem. When people have a lot of money, and we can get to how do they make a lot of money.
Yeah.
When they have a lot of money, there are other money issues that come with it. And there are now stresses in different ways. You're like, well, how do I deal with my children? I've got my marital relationship. I've got business partners. There's all sorts of different issues from having money. And so in a way, no one's or very few people are without stress about it. But what I think is the solution, you know, what I sort of profess as the solution is, you know, it really comes down to what I've coined the energy of money. And a lot of that relates to who you are and how you think about money. When I was a lot younger and I was just becoming an entrepreneur, I used to run around saying to people, well, money never sleeps. And I think what people have missed is that you're taking thoughts about money, good and bad, to bed with you every day. And so even when you're asleep, you are processing thoughts about money. And in a way, you need to go to sleep at night with positive outlook about money and your future. Now, that's not an easy thing.
Yeah. Like, how does one do that? If it's like, if someone can barely eat? You know, and like they're actually physically, can't do something because of they don't have money.
They put a lot of it around identity, and that if you can do some work on yourself, which again means in a way separating yourself from the environment you're in, whether it's a good environment or a bad environment, but because all of us can continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find your identity and, you know, more about who you are, but how you want the world to see you, to develop the belief that, you know, nothing's impossible.
Right.
And with that is to value yourself highly. That's not to run around with a big ego and be a narcissist and say, look, I'm better than everybody else. But it's to place a value on yourself,
right,
and on what your goals are, and to then put positive energy out there in the world. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, if you do that one night that suddenly you're going to wake up tomorrow and gold is going to get delivered to you. But at the end of the day, if you can craft a narrative for yourself around an identity of who you want to be and aspire to be, and value that and value yourself, you can start to put energy out there in the world where you meet different people that are going to help you get there. Because I think a lot of success in life comes from the people that you meet at the right time. And a lot often you don't meet people who are going to help you because you're not ready to, your mindset's not ready. What I call making quantum leaps.
Okay.
And you've got to believe all the time that you can make a quantum leap.
Yeah. There is something.
None of this is easy.
Yeah, but it's
the
not
people
easy.
That have
yeah.
done it.
Yeah.
And there are plenty, you know, like I was reading a story the other day of a woman, I've forgotten the name, of color.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was 42 years old and she'd gone from a very humble upbringing to being worth $320 million through a business she created. She somehow went and met Kim Kardashian.
Oh, wow.
This business grew. But I was very inspired by her because she took a lesson from her mother, and it comes back to what I said before, is to value yourself, value your goals. So it's in a way, it's having confidence with humility. But you've got to believe, and you've got to believe in the dream, and it unfolds itself as you go along. But I think you've got to give yourself space to allow those dreams to actually happen and to do something about it. I don't believe anything is impossible.
And I think that a lot of the times we don't know how much control we really have over our own lives, and we kind of get stuck in this victim mindset. And when you're a victim, you kind of like forfeit the power that you really truly have over your life. And I think that it's really hard to pull yourself, because the mind is a really, really tricky place.
Very tricky, the mind.
So it's like you really have to pull yourself and truly believe in yourself and know that anything is possible. If it was possible for Kim Kardashian, or possible for you or me, it's possible for anyone. We're no different. I mean, we might have had different cards placed in front of us, but it is possible. And you should just not let life like beat you down that way. Like, you have complete power and control to be whoever you want to be. I truly believe that. I've read The Secret before I moved to New York, actually, and the Law of Attraction, and that's what has allowed me to continue on my journey to be who I am. And I've helped my friends with it and things like that too. And even my parents, they're immigrants from Kenya, and of course they had a different mindset, but now they're able to see their dreams come true as well, just by believing that. Everything is possible. And even for them to see where they were to where they are now, anything is possible. You know what I'm saying? It's like they came from nothing and created a beautiful life.
I believe that, you know, we are all put on this earth with a unique makeup, and our job is to go out there and find what we're called to do, and to go and do it, and to try everything out and find where you're going to get flow or not flow. Know when the energy walls are up against you, it's not really working. Well, it might be that you're not passionate about it, your talents don't fit that, move on to something else. But what a lot of people do is, this is where money comes into play, and money gets into people's head, they create rules about money. Oh, well, I've been doing this for 10 years, so I should have made X dollars. I'm going to move on to something else. Or I'm a failure because I haven't got as much as the person next door to me. You're never going to have as much as the person next door to you.
Right.
Right. It's about it. You know, I think so. Therefore, part of this in being successful is actually defining what success for you is. And if it is defined based on money, you will fail.
That's
it's
good.
It's got to be defined on something else, probably in this world, something that's human contribution based, but has a realism in money as well, in the sense that you're not just doing it for charity purposes. So there is a fine, you know, it comes with making money in some way. But if you just say, well, my self-worth is based on the fact that I made $1 million or $50 million, or I'm earning $1 million a year, well, that can go away very, very quickly. But are you worth nothing because money got lost? And you know, there's lots of people out there that make money in a business or in the stock market or whatever, and then they lose it a couple of years later. It happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean you're a worse person or lesser person?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. Or a lot of people who have a lot of money and they are still very much so like not fulfilled or not happy or in their lives.
And that is the worst place to be. And I know plenty of people. Some of them are my peers from whether it's from high school, university, business life, that are unfulfilled. They've got a level of misery in varying doses or unhappiness in their life because they have defined their life around how much money they've got. They've defined their relationship around that. And that's the biggest problem. And therefore, that's where money becomes, in a way, the root of all evil. It becomes the destroyer.
I think you mentioned this before, that the stress still comes no matter what level you are with your money. It's going to be some stress around money, period. And you mentioned something about wealthier people and like their kids. And what I've noticed is that people who have worked hard to get something or they're wealthy, they kind of like give it all to their kids. Their kids kind of end up not knowing how to work for themselves or not knowing how to make their own money, make their own mistakes. And they kind of just end up either, like I've seen a lot of like addicts or just a lot of people that just don't live up to their potential because they kind of always have like the backbone of their, you know, wealthy family. Have you seen that? And like, can you speak to that? And how can someone who might be a child of someone who is pretty wealthy, how can they still make sure that they're living up to their potential? You know, because I feel like people are really hungry when they don't have anything also. You know, it's like, I have to go and get this. But if you're really comfortable in what you have because of a parent, it can be tricky in a sense of like going and getting it and hustling and that whole thing. So, yeah. What do you think about that?
I think if money is laid out in front of the children and it's easy to access from a young age, and they don't go and learn how to, study properly, you know, take the opportunity to go to college, university, or learn skills, go and do some things, go and buy a house by themselves, those types of things, then that's problematic. And at the end of the day, the kids need to have a purpose. Now, do they have to go and because the families or the parents have made money and they're wealthy, do they have to go and be lawyers and accountants and whatnot? No.
Right, right.
They don't have to do that. In fact, that's the worst thing. Is to go and do things because you think that's what's going to make your parents happy. That's also a problem that happens with families of money. That's a very big problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have too much money, I think what you're alluding to is you may not go and work properly. You may not find what your real purpose and passions are. You will sidestep the hard moments that maybe you do need to go and get tested.
That's what I'm. Yes, you'll sidestep or just not even know how to handle those like hardships because you're not used
money
to
can
the hardship.
money can be sort of used to paper over a lot of problems, and it can be then later in life in relationships as well, marital relationships. It's easy to write checks to solve the problem and ignore the deeper communication issue or difference that's lurking below the surface. So, you know, I think that they're big challenges, but I also think that, what some of the wealthy are doing now is just saying, well, I'm not giving any to my kids and I'm giving it all away.
Interesting.
I don't know that necessarily has to happen quite as aggressively as it does. I do get the point of giving a lot away. I have no problem with that.
Right.
But there's got to be family conversations about all of those things. You can't have surprises.
Right.
Everybody's got to know where they stand. But I definitely, you know, coming back to your point, if your kids are flying business class because you've got the money and it's easy for you as a parent to fly business class, they're never going to want to go backwards.
Right.
They're going to become entitled, right? If there's always fancy skiing holidays and cruises and goodness knows what else, then probably the hunger is going to get sapped. But does that mean parents can't help the kids into something?
It's beautiful because I think that's a part of like why you work hard is to help the generations under you to make – that's the point of, you know, I think a lot of things in life. So it's kind of like a weird
– And I think the other problem is that and I think there's some generational issues here too. But I think one of the problems is that when the parents have money and if both parents are working particularly, it's easy that they're out of the house a lot. There's other things that they're doing, and the kids can get ignored and starved of attention. And at the end of the day, I think when you unravel it all, what most kids are wanting, the most that they want from you is your time.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
And that's the most important thing. And that's not easy to manage. You know, if you're a business orientated person, you have got to be out of the house to some degree to do that. But you've got to provide the structure in your life to provide the time for the kids at the right moments, touch points. That's very important. And you probably have to do that for your wife too. I'm not saying I'm perfect in any of these things, but I've watched some of my friends who have done this well and not done it well. I've got a 13-year-old and 11-year-old. I got to having kids later in life, and I got to see what was good and not good, right? Sometimes you've got to put the time in at home, and that might slow you down with something else, you know. But again, that's the energy flows of life. You've got to understand where you're at any one time.
Right.
But I think you're raising a big issue there. Again, it just gets to the fact that money can hide a lot of things, and it sort of needs to be taken out of the equation a bit.
Right. So you talk a lot about the three dimensions of money. What are those three dimensions?
Well, there's, you know, first one is there's money just as a currency. It's what you see in the bank account or can touch. There's the tangible side, what you could go and immediately spend tomorrow or invest. There's money is behavioral. Money is tied to who you are, what your attitude towards money is tied to the person who you are. So I am all about recognizing that each human being is wired differently. It's had a different, you know, life journey. We've got different behaviors or personality. So we've all got a different money personality that's wired into us based on, in a way, our very early life. That's the hardwired part. And then what we've learned.
Okay.
And the third part is money is what you think money is, which is potentially the positive and false beliefs and the monkey talk sitting in your head.
Mm-hmm. What are some ways that people can figure out their money personality? Like, how would I know what that is?
Well, you know, not to to derail this great conversation with a big sales pitch, but people could go to our website.
There we go. Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah. But, you know, people could go to our website and complete the DNA behavior profile, and then you're going to start to learn a lot about your financial behavior and how you make decisions, you know, and what you're going to find there is, am I a risk taker? How open am I to talking about money? How do I make emotional or more rational type decisions with money, or in, you know, am I instinctive about it? Importantly, I think the big one is to identify whether you're a spender or a saver and what fiscal restraints you have. So they're the types of things, they're the first few things that you learn, and you learn also about what your sort of wealth creation drive is. You know, some of us, I think we all want some money, but some are wired to want to work and earn and earn more. And others are, you know, if I have a certain amount, I'm content. And then we all have different things that we want to do with money. You know, some people are very in the moment, you know, entertaining my friends, being seen to be good with my friends, wearing the right clothes. Others want to spend it on life experiences. Others, it's about family education. Others, you know, look, they're very focused on retirement. That can be good. While saving is good, and I think it's the most important thing to learn, and fiscal management, if you overdo it, you start to restrict your life. I know mm-hmm. people who are worth $50 million and think they haven't got enough money. Well, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
It is insane, but it exists out there. That is a mental health problem in its own right.
is there ever enough? Like, you know, like, and I feel like even that happens if you, like, once I reach like six figures, I thought, okay, I'm going to be at six figures, like, that's it, whatever. And then as soon as I reached it, it's like I wanted it and needed more because my expenses went up, everything else went up. And I'm like, wait, I thought that this was going to be, you know, the best part of my life. And, but it was like, oh no, I still found myself still wanting for more, which seems like a bigger issue. Like,
it's, yeah. And I mean, I can remember when I was a kid, you know, or in my teens, I wanted to have a Mercedes Benz, you know, and I thought, okay, and I'm going to get one when I'm 30. Well, I got one when I was about 32. And after about 3 months, you know, I decided this is an extremely empty experience.
Oh, wow.
And the car, I think I started traveling to America, you know, maybe a year later, that type of thing. But it was really very empty. Having the car, it didn't better my life. It set me apart from my friends, probably more than I was already, in varying ways. And it didn't help me in any respect, in any way. And so, you know, I think that you've got to be careful what you're aspiring to have, and, you know, earning money for the sake of having it, and then buying these toys. It's the same with boats and yachts and things like that. Now, I'm not saying I'm against all that, because for some people, having a boat can mean a lot of
creating experiences too with your family. It can create great times.
But if it's a status symbol that's just getting in the way, that's another problem.
Right. Very true.
And, you know, it's the same with, where do you do vacations? Do you always have to go to an expensive ski resort, or can you actually go walking in mountains, mm-hmm. and hiking, and, you know, being out there in nature? You know, that there's as much to get out of all of that, or going to Machu Picchu or something, you know. I think that people need to think about these things very carefully, but some of that, Penny, comes with age too, and maturity, and you've got to go through.
Yeah. Right. And the world and society, especially now with social media, is telling us that we need more money, like that. Like, that's what luxury is, what happiness looks like. And I do wonder if you have a story or a friend or someone who made it to this point, had so much money, realized that they weren't happy, but then went on another journey to look for their happiness in other ways. And like, what did that look like for them? Because I feel like We don't know what we don't know. So someone who's never had that type of money is like, I mean, I think that that's what will make me happy. They get there, they realize, oh, I did not know that this was not going to actually make me happy. So I think that, like, I would love to hear a story of someone who's actually gone through that journey. If you know anyone or have any examples, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I think that I could safely say, I'll give a few examples, and I'll be personal too. I could say that I know a number of people that have been successful in business, made a lot of money, and then they're sitting there very unfulfilled. And I don't know too many of them that have found the pathway out to doing something else that then creates real joy in their life. So I absolutely see that, but I also see others that have made money, and then they have had the intellectual curiosity, let's say in their mid-50s, to go and find some and do something else, not necessarily always making money, but to go and serve people in some way, in a not-for-profit endeavor, or help people set up a business. You know, so I see that. I think in my own life, you know, there's been a couple of instances of this. One was when I was 35 and I sat there in Sydney unfulfilled with having a wealth management business. I was quite successful at it, had built up clients, doing deals, making, you know, relatively a lot of money. I had everything that anybody would ever want. But when someone asked me what I was passionate about, I was not passionate about any of that. I was unfulfilled. And that's where I knew what came out of my mouth that day was, I want to help people all over the world become self-empowered. And I decided, when I started to think about what that meant, and the fact that came out of my brain, my subconscious brain, I knew I was evolved enough to know I have to do something about it. So that took me on the path of coming to America to doing to where I'm at today. And then I would say in 2000, and here's another example, in about 2018, I'd had a very difficult, you know, business period. I was involved with a company that didn't really go so well. I was a chairman of it. Me and a whole lot of people were deceived. You know, there was a lot of stress. I've been flying to and from Australia probably every 6 weeks for 3 or 4 years. And I just said, you know what, I just need to take stock right now. And I need to find a way to spend more time with my family. And two, I need to do something for myself. And I love playing golf. And I saw at the golf club where I was at was one of the younger pros there was organizing a fitness program for effectively it's a professional golfers fitness program. I started doing that 3 mornings a week between 7 and 8:30. I carved out the time where I normally would be doing other stuff. And that took me on a path to getting a lot healthier, fitter. I lost 60 pounds.
Wow.
I'm now, you know, I do a lot of work, Penny, on longevity because longevity is also related to money and stress.
Yeah.
And my longevity metrics would show that my health span is my biological age, put it this way, is 14 years younger than my chronological age.
Oh, wow.
But I did myself a big favor there in 2018 by changing eating, drinking, exercise. But the big thing is when you're going to make a life change somewhere is to find something you enjoy and take baby steps with it. And I took baby steps then, but now it's a big part of my life, you know, doing those kind of exercises. I do much heavier stuff cardio-wise. I wear the devices. Everybody on my team is into it.
Oh, cool.
And every year when we bring our clients together for a conference, we have a longevity segment. But the big thing is I think I would even say to someone who's got a spending problem with money or some other problem in their life, find one thing that you enjoy doing and do that. Set a little goal, not a big goal. Conquer that and then build up from there.
Yeah. People really underestimate like the power of fitness. I think because it sometimes it seems cliche, okay, workout, but it really does change your life. Like it changed my life.
It does because one, if you can find something in fitness, it doesn't have to be what I did, but if you can be in anything, even if it's just going for a walk once a day, you can make it enjoyable. You can make it meditative if you want. You can do whatever you need to do. It's carving time out for you. You're enjoying it. And to do that, you've got to make a whole lot of other changes. You've got to, you know, change work scheduling, when I'm going to drive to the office, when I'm going to have meetings, setting all those rules.
So it ends up changing different, like all of your life in a sense, in a good way.
And then you start to say, gee, you know what? I'm feeling really good.
Yeah.
I'm feeling in control of my life. Well, maybe then I don't want to eat a whole lot of sugar at night or eat big steaks and not be able to sleep, or worse, drink alcohol and suddenly realize, gee, that's just destroyed my body energy for the next
mm-hmm.
2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, what you start spending money on starts to change because your values start to change and what's important to you starts to change.
That's good, yeah.
But if you just said to people, look, you've got to build a budget, you've got to go and stop working as hard and you keep it all loose and do all that sort of stuff, no one's going to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's, one, it's communicated the wrong way and it's off in another land. And you know what? No one knows. Okay, yeah, I know I should be working less and I should be doing ABCD.
Saving money,
save money. There's no starting point in that.
Yeah. That's more actionable for sure.
It's got to be actionable. And you know what? And then it's up to you. It's in your mindset. But the other thing is, Penny, is who you hang around with.
Yeah.
Because
I think that's really good for like my age group, like the 20s, 30s. It's like we're, you know, we're making new friends. We are, yeah, I think that's a good point. We have to take stock of who our friend group is, who we're around.
You don't have to write off any person in the world But sometimes you've got to choose who you're going to spend more time with and why. And that's part of perhaps achieving the goals. You know, if you're around other people that are getting themselves, let's say getting themselves fit and healthy, they're all enjoying doing that. You don't feel under pressure when you go out to drink and smoke and all the stuff that goes on. It becomes a whole lot easier.
Yeah.
And there's other shared values. But it doesn't mean just because someone smokes a cigarette or drinks more than you do that you have to ignore them. But somewhere with it, your values start to change and you figure out what's important.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of creating change in your life, because if you are around the wrong people or the people that are not a fit for where you want to go, it's going to be a whole lot harder to get there.
Mm-hmm. This is a great
segue. Because you need people in your network that in a way are doing the same things as you.
Yeah, it's a good segue to, it's a new year. We all want to make better choices, better decisions in our life. And you talk a lot about making those better choices. And we are all like one choice away from a different life. I really do believe that.
We are one choice away.
Yeah, we don't think about it as seriously as we should, especially in our age group. So can you talk about making those choices and like your ideas on that as well?
Yeah, I think the first thing is you've sort of got to set out your, you know, to a point, Penny, it's setting out your identity, who you want to be, finding the things you enjoy, and then taking out all the negative talk out of your head. You know, let's say I said to myself, okay, I'm 58 years old and I want to be a scratch golfer. Is there any reason why I can't be? Not really. Now, I have to go away and make the time. Is that a choice that I want to make, you know, and sacrifice some time at home or rejig business meetings and whatnot? Yep. But that's a choice. And then you start to organize things, or you say you want to lose 10 pounds or 15 pounds, then you figure that out and then you look at, okay, what's the plan for how I need to get there and what do I need to do? And then you can make the choice. But I think if you say up front, well, there's no way I could ever do that.
There's no way you can ever do that.
but I do think that there's being realistic to some degree is probably important as well. I mean, I don't think that, you know, I think people can be visionary and put something out there that's completely, so unrealistic. But there is an area for all of us where we can live in the world of sort of growing exponentially and having, there being unlimited potential, I think.
Another question. I have a friend who had a roommate who basically was really, really bad with money, but they were best friends. So it was kind of hard for them. They would talk about money, but still it's like the other friend felt obligated to, I guess, help the friend out on rent and different things like that. When in reality, it's like we all need to focus on our own money and be able to pay rent. And I'm wondering, why is it so hard to talk about money, and like, how can we talk about money more freely and easily with our friends and our family, especially as young people living in one of the most expensive cities, New York City. And money is such a factor right now with the economy right now. Like, how can we make those conversations easier without kind of being pushy?
Yeah, well, talking about money, it's always the elephant in the room, isn't it? And that's the problem. And in a way, you know, and this is where the energy of money conversation we're talking about before is so important, because so many things about a person get connected to money in some way. And judgments then get made because of it. And, you know, I suppose with the two flatmates, that the one who's able to pay the rent and earning more money, depending on how he or she talks to the other person who hasn't got so much money, you know, how's the message going to get received? And then the other person says, well, you're always lucky and, you know, you've got these skills, or it's the same thing goes on between, you know, brothers and sisters. You know, one seems to always have some money in his or her pocket, and the other one seems to have a problem or doesn't do as well and writes it off. Well, you know, you're lucky, or you got all the brains, or mum and dad always helped you out more than me. I mean, the reality is that's the victim story stuff that you were talking about before. And I think that at the end of, you know, so money comes with money, a lot of judgment, and people start to say, well, okay, this person's made a lot of money. He or she must have stolen it, or they were lucky. You know, I think that it's something to be celebrated. But I think when money is talked about in the context of identity, you know, and this is the same for a couple. I think, you know, married couple have trouble often talking about money. But if you can talk about it enough in relation to your identity, who you are, what you want to be, not put too much expectation on how much has got to be there at a certain time and date and those types of things, don't make promises that you can't fulfill, all that stuff, it can be a whole lot easier. But I think in going back to your sort of story about the two people living in the apartment, at the end of the day, the person not paying their way has to go and sort it out for themselves.
Right. Very, very true.
And that doesn't mean the two of them can't be friends, right? The person that's got the money might say could help them in other emotional ways or friendship ways or network ways without loaning them the money, right? Because it's probably likely if they loan them the money or pay more of the rent, they're not going to get that back.
Yeah, because it's probably, like you said, it's a mindset thing that probably is going on as to why they aren't able to afford or, to, you know what I mean? That is so true. So as we're coming to a close, what is one thing that you want to leave my audience with which I'm going to give like a profile of like most of my audience are people who want to grow, people who already are saving or already kind of on their journey, but definitely want to take it to that next level. So after they take your amazing test, I think that everyone should take that test first. What do you think is a great next step, or what advice, or what would you like to like let them tell them to continue on with their journey?
Well, I think the first thing is never Penny, lose sight of your dream. Always be prepared to be in search of your calling. You know, learn to recognize when, if you want to call it, the energetic brick wall is up in front of you, but to see that there is another side to that, if you go through it and the black clouds lifted, that there is always opportunity out there. But be clear about, you know, about your purpose. But don't tie it down by saying, well, gee, by age 35, I've got to have $1 million of free cash. Because it doesn't always work that way. I think it's taking positive steps. It's doing things that you enjoy. Doesn't mean that it's all going to be easy every day. Invest in yourself a little bit, you know, be curious to learn things, to understand how other people tick, be open to meeting somebody different in a different setting. You never know what's going to come about that. So don't have too many preconceived ideas. And I think as I learned this just a couple of days ago from, you know, reading the blog about this very successful, you know, woman, have value yourself and have confidence in that, but have humility. And I think the other thing at the end of the day is generally speaking, you know, have some mindset to save some money for tomorrow. but spend some today on life experiences, because you don't even know what tomorrow is going to deliver. But by having those life experiences, life can grow as well. And I think that, you know, that's important, but you don't need to be spending your money on rubbish. And okay, it's easy for all of us when we're young to do that. But yeah, and I think, yeah, cultivate a network. That's the thing. And, you know, of the right sorts of people. And over time, you're going to grow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I always ask my guests what brings them peace of mind? What has been bringing them peace of mind? You mentioned fitness and working out. So anything else? It could be so random. It could be a book. It could be a song. It could be just anything that's been currently bringing you peace of mind.
Oh, I think that, you know, I get peace of mind when I'm comfortable, I can see the future. So I think, you know, I've learned over the last few years to spend more time with meditation and putting myself in quiet moments so that I can, in a way, you know, through the meditation process, also allow the information packets to float through my head, and to, you know, to work out what I need to do with that. So I think, you know, allowing yourself plenty of time. I think sometimes just being able to take time out and just do some deep breathing. All of those things can help. And I think it's also to always know that there is a brighter tomorrow, even though today might be the worst day in the world. You've got a friend that's sick, or a family member, or a loved one, or whatever, or something's just has gone wrong. You've lost clients. There's a brighter tomorrow, and I think understand some of those things are happening for a reason. They may not be very pleasant, but there's a brighter tomorrow, and I think I take peace of mind out of those things. And, you know, and then just to know I've got a family that loves me. I've got two dogs that definitely unconditionally love me.
Yeah.
You know, all of those things, it's all part of it.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you so much. This was amazing. I had a great time. I hope you had a good time too.
I did, Penny. I loved every minute of this.
Yes.
You're inspiring. And I think it's great that, you know, you're out here asking people like me these questions. I feel very honored. And I hope that, you know, this is just the start of helping many more people realize their dreams and go out there and get it done.
Thank you. Definitely. And if you wanted to say your website, your books, or anything that you want to.
I think just go to, you know, you can go to dnabehavior.com and you'll see everything there. You can find me there. Send me an email. It's all there. You can do it from there.
Yeah. And I'll also put all the information in the description box and on social media and everywhere whenever the episode comes out. So yes, thank you so much.